Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 135 of D&D Discussions, the podcast for players and DMs alike, where we cover a wide variety of topics to help you with your games. I'm your host, Ryan Reeder, and with me, as always, is my good buddy, Ben Mumhopper. How are you doing tonight, Ben?
I have a really bad sore throat, and my arm hurts, so doing
so-so.
A little below par for the course, but I think I'm still going to make it through.
As long as your mouth works. That's all you need for this.
Solo show.
Oh God. We have some really interesting things to talk about tonight, especially considering the new content drop that just happened like 2 days ago.
The surprising content drop.
So we're going to get into that. We're going to get into a little bit of introducing non-fantasy things into your fantasy games. So that'll be a kind of an interesting discussion as well. But first off, let's hit up our news and then the big stuff. The main news being, for those of you who are D&D content creators or are looking to create D&D content, D&D Beyond finally released the conversion guide, the SRD conversion guide. So converting to the system reference document 5.2.1. So this is out now on D&D Beyond. We'll have a link in the show notes to help you convert whatever you need to the latest version of the system reference document. And this is a fairly big deal. As you know, they recently released the new SRD in the Creative Commons, which is awesome. So officially now we can start seeing third-party content for the 5.5, essentially. Because all that used to be out was the basic rules, and you couldn't technically create new content from that. But now the floodgates are open. And honestly, we've started seeing it happening. D&D Beyond at least seems to be adding lots more third-party content onto the site. We're seeing more and more of that. Again, we've talked about this. I hope we see some updates for filtering and for sorting and just better ways to manage all these things coming onto the site. But it is very exciting. And it's very cool to see all these third-party creators get access to this much wider audience as well.
Yeah. And I mean, just kind of doing we're not going to even come close to going like, you know, exhaustive or even really looking into this, but I mean, it is just straight up, hey, here's a revised rule. Hey, here's a new rule. You know, just bunches of different stuff all the way down to, monsters like animals. Hey, new name or revised rule. Like the first one on here is giant seahorse. Formerly giant sea space horse, as opposed to one full word. I mean, I'm assuming incredibly in depth. That's really going to help you see anything that you need. So good on them for releasing it. And I mean, we're not part of that side of things, so who knows on why it took as long as it did. I mean, the books have been out for a while, but hey, at least it's out now. And, good luck to anybody who is making content.
Make things.
Yes.
And speaking of making things, Wizards dropped honestly, very, very surprising piece of content. So they dropped a new Unearthed Arcana. I think it was like Monday. The Scion. It was Monday or Tuesday. It not very long ago at all. But yeah,
it was Tuesday.
It was yesterday, literally yesterday, because we usually record on Wednesdays. And this is the Scion. This is a brand new class for 5.5. And honestly, I wasn't expecting this, especially with what Jeremy Crawford used to say of probably not going to do any new classes or anything besides the Artificer. But Jeremy Crawford's not there anymore.
Yeah, I was just about to see. He leaves. What's the first thing they do?
He's probably not making those decisions anymore. And so obviously the Scion is kind of a holdover. This is not something brand new. This is something that has been in D&D in previous editions, but this is kind of a fifth edition take on the class itself. And it is a full on class.
Yeah.
That has four different subclasses to it. So this is really cool. And I'm honestly I was pleasantly surprised because I personally think there's a lot of design space in fifth edition for brand new classes.
Oh, like definitely.
I don't think everything needs to fall under subclasses to the existing classes. And I think that is proven out very well in the myriad of full on third party classes that have been released for fifth edition. MCDM has several that are all very unique and in their own design space. The DMs Guild has several. Kobold Press has put some out. I think I've talked about the supplement before, the magical tattoos supplement. The last one they did, the second one, has two full classes in it that are just like based around like these magical tattoo type things. But again, there's so much design space out there, in my opinion, that can cover new classes and then subclasses under them that don't need to be limited by the classes that are currently out. So this makes me very happy. I'm hoping over these next, 5-10 years of this 5.5 edition, we see more of these. We see more new classes and more of this design space explored.
Yeah. And one of the things that was brought up on the intro video is that Psionics isn't exactly new to fifth edition, which I think is really neat because they're already pulling from, kind of a thing and potentially resource and stuff that exists already. And, finally bringing that class back into the space. So psionic powder is used by, a couple of the different subclasses. I know that the rogue soul blade is one of them specifically. There's some fighter subclass, I think. I can't remember exactly which one it is, but I mean, there's a few of them in there. So like the big thing here is that we have another type of caster who, their primary ability is based on intelligence, which, being mind bullets and stuff, I would hope so. But they've got it set up so that it's actually pretty cool. Your resource is an energy die, which, starts off as a D6 and then, upgrades to a D8, then to a 10, to a 12, kind of similar with how a rogue's inspiration dice does, or, any of the other kind of, dice mechanics that we get. They have spell slots, certain number of prepared spells and stuff, cantrips.
They're full on all caster.
The
normal
stuff. Yeah, exactly. But some of the stuff that they get is actually pretty cool. The psionic power, like a lot of it is used to kind of, add to your totals or subtract from totals of people's roles, whether it be your own or, an enemy or an ally or something like that. But you have a couple different cool things in here. Like you have the psionic modes. You can go into like attack mode or defense mode, which I think is kind of cool. So you can, flavor your character on, which way you want to go. So like, your weapon attacks and psionic spells and stuff, like it ignores anyone who's actually resistant to psychic damage, which that's actually kind of huge, especially if you're going up against something like a mind flayer. So like, if you're doing some sort of like spell jammer thing, this would be a great thing to use if you're going to go into a mind flayer hive. One thing that's really cool is like in defensive mode, if you fail an intelligence, wisdom, or charisma saving throw, you can use its psionic energy and then like add a number so that you might not fail, which I think is pretty cool. One of those great features. On top of that, you can get those dice back. You get more back once you, per short rest, like once you get to higher levels. You have something called psionic surge, which lets you regain, those psionic modes and stuff that you've used. You can kind of, regain all that stuff. Enkindled life force at level 20, if, you ever actually get that high. But basically you can start using your hit point die to actually give you more psionic energy, which that's something that I've seen in a couple of these abilities, is that it starts to use actually like your hit point dice to, you know, kind of add more to some of your abilities as well. So they're taking another resource that you have and kind of, you know, making it so that your mind and body, like as a whole, I think one of the subclasses specifically like really pushes towards that. But then you have like your different discipline options, which it's think of it like a, like an Eldritch invocation or something. You know, you have like these kind of different abilities, or like the sorcerer abilities that you can use, you know, the sorcery points for and stuff, which is actually kind of cool. I like all these. Like if you spend, or if you cast certain types of spells, you can use one of your psionic die and like give you like things like temporary hit points or add to the damage or different things like that. You can add to, you know, attack rolls. You have psionic backlash that lets you basically take a reaction to use your energy die to, you know, save you from things, to attack different things and stuff. It's really leaning in on a lot of this like kind of psychic ability stuff. Like a lot of it, it's really neat. I'm enjoying just the base class by itself. Like what are you thinking about it?
Yeah, there's a lot to, I think there's a lot of potential here. There's a lot to like. You talked about the different psionic powers and the features. Just the level one stuff I really like. You get a base telepathic connection, which is super cool. It's you start with basically a telepathy, which is, you know, being able to talk into people's minds from 5 feet. But as a bonus action, you can expend a psionic energy die, roll it, and for a number of minutes equal to your psion level, the range of your telepathy increases by a number of feet equal to 10 times the number rolled. Talk about like prepping that pre-combat and then being able to like yell out stuff in people's heads or try and get in the enemy's heads. But that, right? That's a fun little thing.
Oh, yeah.
Or the telekinetic propel, right? As a bonus action, you can choose one large or smaller creature other than you within 30 feet. Roll one of your psionic energy die. The target has to succeed on a strength save or be pushed or pulled, your choice, up to a number of feet straight away from yourself equal to 5 times the number rolled.
Yeah.
So super, super cool stuff. The fantasy is great. Obviously, like, very the X-Men, right? You got your Xavier, you've got your Jean Grey, right? Like this is really what this reminds me of. And then it gets even deeper into that archetype wise when you look at the subclasses. But the thing that really stands out to me about this new style design is, number one, there's a lot of things that use bonus actions.
Yes.
Which I really like a lot. Because I feel like an old design, a lot of this stuff would have been actions.
Oh, definitely.
Just based on like, you know, what 5e design used to be. But a lot of these are bonus actions. And then the other big thing that is more in the trend of the new design, your resource is not expended unless it succeeds.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty much all these different features say that. Like just even this teleconnect propel, like the die is expended only if the target fails the saving throw. So this is just so much more player friendly, and it makes your turn so much cooler because you have your action to use, but you also have your bonus action to use on this cool thing. And by the way, the resources don't get expended unless that cool thing actually works.
Yeah. And one of the other things too, I think it's more, let's see, down in one of the subclasses, gosh, is it the Psy? And we'll go into them in just a moment, but I'm not sure if it's the Psy Warper or a different one, or the I think it's the Psy Kinetic maybe. Basically, it starts specifically using language, like, you know, when you're pushing and pulling things horizontal to you. So it's not, you know, or they're thinking things through where it's not like, you know, shooting them straight up into the air, like 60 feet and then just dropping them or something like that. You know, they're being very careful with kind of what they're doing, which it restricts a little bit of creativity, but at the same time, it's helping DMs a lot so that they don't, you know, prepare an encounter and then suddenly, oh, I've got a psionic in my group. I need to make sure every room is only 10 feet tall so that they don't just instantly kill, you know, half the guys who, you know, in the room or something like that. But there are certain things that don't have that specific verbiage in there. So as you like level up and get better at doing different things, your powers and stuff actually kind of grow with it. And it opens up some of that cool, like creativity and fun, crazy, wacky, throwing things around with your mind gameplay.
Yeah. And, the other really cool piece of this class, one, they made several new spells that, the Scion can, there's a few that only the Scion can get, but there's also a few that, like warlocks, bards, and a few wizards, a few other classes can get. But the really cool piece of the Scion is in their spellcasting ability, table. And it's called psionic spellcasting. When you cast a Scion spell, this, so anything that's labeled, you know, for use with Scion, the spell doesn't require verbal or material components, even if the spell includes a V or M in its components entry, mm-hmm. except material components that are consumed by the spell or have a cost specified in the spell. If a bard or a warlock or a wizard is casting it, you do still need those verbal and material components, but the psionic, it's all mind-based magic essentially. And so that was one of the things they pointed out in the video, and obviously we'll have the video linked in the show notes as well if you haven't seen it yet. It's about 10 minutes long, and they just kind of go through the overview of the main class and the four subclasses. But I thought that was a really interesting thing for this class specifically. And depending on the type of game you're playing or the type of DM you have, could be incredibly useful in certain situations.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely. I mean, taking away, you know, just verbal and somatic gestures and stuff like that is huge. So like having the ability to kind of do that at times, I think is a massive like boost to spell casting, which of course, as we've seen, each of the different spellcasters, you know, feels different, has its kind of own flavor of play. And I like that the Scion is, you know, really falling into that same line of thinking of, you know, this is actually something different. It's not, hey, I'm a psionic. You wouldn't know me from a sorcerer. You know, and it's not just based on what spells they can do, but it's the add-ons and the extras and the subclasses that really make it kind of stand out from its counterparts.
Yeah. And so let's jump into just a little overview of the subclasses, right? So we have the Metamorph, the Psywarper, the Psykinetic, and the Telepath. In the video, they kind of talked about these different things. Some of these subclasses are a little more offensive focused, some are a little more defensive focused, some are a little more support focused. The Metamorph specifically is the fantasy of your brain is just so powerful, or your brain magic is just so powerful, you can literally warp reality, right? And so this is kind of the I guess let's just go with the example of Metamorpho, right?
Yeah.
From like your Superman villain who can basically change his body structure, Clayface, right? Mm-hmm. So you can essentially make your limbs into organic weapons whenever you need them. These can be like a blade, a maul, a launcher of some sort. You can gain extra limbs. You can extend your limbs out further, be a Mr. Fantastic, since we're just going with lots of superhero references.
This is
the very offensive, maybe a little more melee focused subclass of the Scion.
It's definitely interesting, and I mean, Yeah, it tells you what you can do, you know, with a blade and a maul, and then the they call it the Viscera launcher, which, you know, your arm turns into a little launcher that shoots acid. I mean, that's real freaky, but kind of cool. But you know, it's something that's kind of cool. Whereas the Psywarper, which is the next subclass, it's basically you're warping space with the power of your mind, which I think is just really cool. You know, it gives you a whole bunch of different types of like,
basically, it's the teleport subclass.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The kind of different like teleports or speed things and stuff like, yeah, you get Featherfall, Misty Step, Dimension Door, just teleportation circle. Cause I mean, kind of makes sense, but like you're just level three. You can just do Misty Step without expending a spell slot, once per long rest, but you can just spend a psionic energy die and then you get it again. So, you know, there you are using that currency. You can basically, you know, teleport things just around when you're using your telekinetic propel, as opposed to like pushing it. You can just pop it somewhere else. Shatter becomes like a bigger spell and kind of like a black hole at the same time. So you get that shatter effect and then everything's just sucked to the center of the sphere that comes out. You can jump around in combat. So you use your Misty Step and then you can immediately do one of your psionic cantrips, which is really cool. The thing that I think is neat is the mass teleportation. You can just, you know, teleport a whole bunch of people within 150 feet or not people, but just creatures within 150 feet. And it doesn't exclude enemies, which I think is great. So you can just be all like, I want to put us all in danger over here on this rickety bridge or something. Just poof, just move us all over there or something, you know, whatever. I don't know what we'd use it with, but
they made reference specifically to that, where they're saying, remember, it's in the rules that you can choose to fail.
Yeah.
Saving exactly. throws. So for these types of things, if you want to, you don't have to roll the saving throw and you can just kind of do the thing, especially if the Scion is like, this is the we're tactically moving over here.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and the level 10 duplicitous target. I think this is just kind of crazy. And you need to have kind of an understanding with your party members. But this is basically where someone attacks you, and then as a reaction, you just swap places with a willing creature. So it definitely has to be someone who is friendly to you, who is good with swapping. And so, you know, make good friends with your tanks. Best way.
And I mean, it makes sense. So the Scion is a D6 for health.
Mm-hmm.
And it is another intelligence caster as well, which is fun. And obviously makes a lot of sense for the Scion, but like you're going to be you're squishy
just a little bit.
This is a squishy class again, so having something like this is awesome. But if you want to be less squishy and more defensive, the Psykinetic is the subclass for you.
Yeah,
this is like basically controlling your psionic powers like as they describe, a malleable force. They bend their telekinetic energies into sturdy barriers and strike with the force of a battering ram. So this is basically like, I kind of think of it as like, you know, like hard light shields type things.
Yeah, I can see that.
But yeah, you essentially get like empowered attack mode, which lets you fly.
that's the seriously like, the psychomantis of it. You're flying around throwing crap all over the place.
Yeah. You get to then that telekinetic propel I talked to you about. There's your level three for the psychokinetic actually lets you add modifiers to it, which I really like. You can basically, you know, have a bolt, a disorient, or a boost to increase that target speed. Because remember, this isn't just about enemies. This is like, I could pull my friend closer to me or push my friend away from danger type thing, right? So there's all sorts of stuff like shenanigans you could do with this type of thing. You got your rebounding field. So like when you cast shield in response to being hit, you can expend a psionic energy die to launch the force back at the attacker. So this is like you know, the mirror type shield. You've got enhanced telekinetic crush, which slows people down, heightened telekinesis, just all sorts of really, really interesting things that you can do that are a little more like, I guess, defense minded.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. To be honest, that's probably what I would lean towards first. I think I'd want to just go in and be a crazy Jedi throwing things around and all that fun stuff. But last off, we have the telepath, which is also really fun. I mean, you get the telepath spells at level 3, which is pretty great. You are a mind infiltrator at that point. So like when you cast detect thoughts, you expend 2 psionic energy die to modify the spell so that it doesn't require any components or concentration. And the target does know the target does not know that you're probing its mind if it fails its wisdom saving throw, which I think is makes sense. You're a telepath. You're better at this than a, you know, random wizard or whatever. The telepathic hub is pretty neat. Your telepathy range, or you have telepathy within the range of 10 feet, which I think is pretty great. You can increase that range with your die and everything, or as part of, using your telepathic connection. You get, a D4 to add to different things with your when you're in defensive mode. On top of that, any creatures that you're connected to with your telepathic connection also get a D4 to those saving throws, which I think is pretty great. You get to add your intelligence modifier to psionic cantrips. You have telepathy up to a range of 30 feet at level 10. When you cast confusion at level 14, you can expend 4 energy die and modify the spell so that the sphere becomes 30 feet. And then also you kind of get to choose what happens when a confused creature has to roll the D10. They actually roll 2 D10s. And then based on those 2 rolls, you get to choose what happens to them, whether, you know, they're able to actually use their action, or if they're stuck doing nothing, or, you know, whatever that D10 table has. So telepaths is kind of cool. You're going in there and just bumbling around with people's minds and, you know, able to talk to a whole bunch of people around you without opening your mouth. I think that's pretty great.
Yeah. Yeah. All honestly, very interesting subclasses. And obviously room for a lot more. And I think we see that. And I mentioned there are some brand new spells. Those are in this, Unearthed Arcana, but there are also 10 new wild talent feats that are kind of feats that supposed to give you like a little taste of psionics, or if you want your character to have that, or if as a psionic character, you want to go in even deeper into the psionics. There are 10 different feats that kind of are a little more focused, like fire, ice, emotional manipulation, flesh morpher, which is just, you know, an extension of your metamorph. So there's, I think these different feats also kind of present potentials for subclasses in the future as well in a lot of ways. But they are in here to potentially give your non-psionic characters a little taste of psionics if that's your preferred character development, or maybe that's like a latent thing that it develops, or maybe you have a little bit of talent for this, but you're not a full-on scion, right? There's a lot of interesting stuff you could potentially take. It's a 13 page UA. It's very big. Yeah, lots to digest.
One big note about the feats is that you only get one wild talent feat, like per character. If you follow the prerequisites are that you can't have another wild talent feat. So you can't be fire and ice, or, you know, any of the other ones, whatever. I'm just going to just leave it at that. Take a look. There's a lot of really cool stuff in here.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that makes a lot of sense. Like, this is kind of like a specific specialization. And that's why I was saying they kind of remind me of subclasses.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways. Like, this is like almost subclass teasers. There's a lot they could, a lot of potential subclasses they could do with the Scion, and a lot of very fun design space. So I'm excited to see what they come up with. I'm excited that they're doing a new class besides the Artificer. That's very exciting. And then, of course, you can check out it on D&D Beyond, or we'll have the links to all these things in the show notes if you want to start looking at it, messing with it, playing it in a one shot or something like that.
Yep. I know I want to make a character soon. So
yeah, this is I made a in my little few shot I did, I used MCDM's The Talent, which is basically their version of a psionic character, right? And so I would love to try and make that character with this new class, just to see how it is. And I know one of the big things that MCDM did with their psionic character is they really put a lot of work into new psionic type spells.
Mm-hmm.
Or is essentially what are the equivalent of spells, right, for that character. So I'm hoping we see wizards do the same thing, because psionics is a very different thing than a lot of the current spell casting we have. So seeing it come with an even more fleshed out new spell list, new spells specifically made for them, would be a thing I would love to see as well.
Definitely.
All right. So moving on, Ben, you had brought this topic up the other day, and I thought it was kind of an interesting thing, because this almost kind of gets into the realm of like a world's technology evolving. Or something else happening. But it's not something I necessarily have thought about a whole lot, but I've done it in my campaign world.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is, we're going to talk just a little bit about introducing like alt fantasy into high fantasy.
Yeah.
We're talking, you know, like the steampunk, guns, gunpowder, things that you might not normally find in your standard high fantasy type game. And so obviously D&D 5.5 has rules, and I mean 5e2 has rules for like firearms. They've got some, you know, baseline rules. There are slightly more than that in 5.5. It expands it fleshes it out a little bit more. But Ben, what are your thoughts? I know as we talked about this a little bit, when would you want to, in your world, or when should a DM in their world think about bringing some non like high fantasy elements into their game?
Yeah, it's something that, you know, kind of came to mind, because as I'm looking more and more towards my second campaign, which is going to be Spelljammer, I'm realizing I'm going to have to kind of make decisions on, okay, well, they have space travel. Am I going to make it strictly, you know, high fantasy? Like, that doesn't seem to make sense to me. So I'm kind of, you know, trying to figure out and incorporate ways. Okay, well, you know, is an artifice or something that would be, you know, at home there? What does the technology look like? And yeah, Spelljammer has a bunch of different, you know, ships and concepts and stuff like that to kind of help with that. But, you know, to me, having something like that doesn't 100% work with a full high fantasy setting. So then I thought, well, how would I change my current world if, you know, someone joined and wanted to play an artificer, which I did have someone who wanted to play an artificer. And I mean, he unfortunately stopped playing with us like a while ago and everything, but it turned into one of those things where I'm like, okay, I don't really have this as a you know, like a mainstream thing going on in the world. So I had to figure out a good way to kind of bring them in. And luckily, the player, you know, really helped a lot with that because, you know, first artificer that I've ever run, much less had in my world. And, you know, it was kind of like the perfect setup, which is basically he played that character as an inventor. So obviously the stuff that he has is new to the world. It's things that, you know, this person's creating. And, you know, the idea of taking something mechanical and then infusing it with magic of some sort in a high fantasy world only makes sense. You know, you're looking at like siege engines and stuff like that, you know, for warfare. Well, what are you going to do to make something more powerful? Infuse it with magic somehow. Well, at that point, you can very easily figure out, it's like, oh, well, you know, this is how you make like a magical turret of some sort, which is, you know, one of the subclasses. You know, alchemy, another kind of one of the subclasses, power armor, which is like the furthest step away from high fantasy that you can get, in my opinion. You know, all of that kind of being used, but having someone who is, you know, brilliant mind, tinkering with things, and, you know, really kind of trying to push the world, you know, into the future. Whether it is like through a steampunk kind of thing or like some sort of like magical reactor kind of thing, you know, it's just something that kind of, you know, makes sense and has a natural progression. Like even in our own history, how we went from, you know, horse and buggy to like using steam engines to do things. And then there's the whole industrial revolution and manufacturing and things like that. And you can see where you can place that kind of the beginnings of this into your world with, you know, those people who are like forward thinking and inventors and things like that. In fact, I think a fantastic way of kind of looking at a before and after is Avatar: The Last Airbender. And then jumping forward to The Legend of Korra. It is a yes. very like,
yes.
yeah. You know, kind of non-technological world. And then within a generation, you have like steampunk and industry and things that are being like introduced and adding in. So you can kind of, you know, bridge the gap in there and add those things to your world if that's where you want to go with it.
Yeah, I think another, if we're talking D&D specifically, good example is Critical Role mm-hmm. in a lot of ways. Some of the stuff between campaign one and campaign two, because in the whole thing, you have Percy doing this firearm stuff and then that technology getting out there. And then all of a sudden there are guns out there now that people are using. So that's a really good example of that type of progression. Obviously, one of the reasons we wanted to talk about this is because we're getting kind of like the refreshed Eberron Artificer coming. We saw the UA for that just not too long ago. And Eberron is very specifically like the high fantasy steampunkish setting. Mm-hmm. So if you're looking for inspiration like that for your D&D campaign, there's a lot of Eberron that you can pull from or use for that type of thing specifically. For my world, I actually have just like the coexistence of those things. They just aren't necessarily on the same continent, right? That could be something that you have where you have a continent that is maybe less technologically advanced than others, mm-hmm. right? And maybe those continents don't interact that much. A really funny example of this is Fantasy High from Dimension 20, where you have this little, the Nation of Solace, which is like, you know, 80s, 90s, 2000s type thing. You've got your crystal cell phone technology, but then everything, the world around at large does not have any of this type of stuff. And it's very much just your medieval fantasy mm-hmm. type thing. And it works really well and it coexists well. And like Ben said, if you're wanting to introduce stuff in your world, maybe you could have had, there could be this generational gap. One of the things that I think about a lot for this type of thing is the Stormlight Archive. And not to like throw any spoilers at or anything, but essentially you have this like cyclical generation of these cataclysms happening. And so the population develops, they develop to a certain point, cataclysm happens, and it basically knocks them back. Right.
Yeah.
And so you could have, if you have a cycle like that or want to do something like that, you could have a cycle like that in your world where people are finding the remnants of these older civilizations that were far more technologically advanced than them before they were wiped out. And then each generation, potentially as they're finding these things, can move that much faster than the previous one and potentially use those findings to stop whatever is causing this cyclical cycle. So there's a lot of really, really cool things that you can do with like this type of technology in your medieval high fantasy type games.
Yeah. And on top of that too, you can always have, you know, this type of technology or something, you know, coming from, you know, as an example, I said like the heavens or like from a different sort of plane. And when I thought of this, my mind immediately went to a Fallout 3 when I was running around the wasteland and randomly found a crashed alien spaceship. And then I had a laser gun for, you know, a little while till the ammo ran out. So you can always introduce, you know, some kind of crazy thing from that. And then from there, you can have, you know, maybe a group of people who found that, you know, kind of like how you were talking with the lost technology, how they're using that and like incorporating it and building things based off of that, except not really having good understanding of exactly how it goes. Another good example of that would be the Horizon series, like Horizon Zero Dawn. You know, they're constantly, you know, delving into all these different, you know, structures from like a ruined world and stuff, mm-hmm. and taking the technology and one, totally not understanding what it actually was, making wild assumptions of things that they do or how it works and stuff. But then also, you know, there are people who are, you know, digging in and learning and trying to figure this out and then, you know, have like the veil of the world lifted away so that they actually kind of see, you know, the real history of things that happened, which I think is actually kind of really interesting. Having people who are tied into like this lost technology who are, you know, wildly superior to another group or something, but they still don't fully understand everything that's going on with it and just are kind of, you know, using it in, you know, haphazardly and stuff. You know, there's also a really good way of, you know, adding some really good conflict there of them doing what they're doing is potentially causing a future disaster of some sort, you know, of happening. And you have to stop it or learn how to, you know, fix it or something along those lines. But I love the idea of, you know, where this primitive isn't even the right word. We're this, you know, world that doesn't have access to this like high end technology. How would I see it? And that brings me to Star Trek and how they use the Prime Directive. The Star Trek Into Darkness, like the beginning of that is like another really good kind of example where, you know, they're trying to save this civilization from a volcano blowing up or whatever. And they see the Enterprise fly away and then they start kind of worshiping the Enterprise as, you know, a deity or something like that. So like having kind of glimpses like that work and, you know, turn it into something more and, you know, can be some fantastic storytelling. It doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, limitless power and technologies and stuff that they find, but it could be just kind of, you know, a way to introduce these things and then, you know, have your player character stumble upon it. And, you know, maybe they're the ones that crack the code to kind of figure out what this thing is and, you know, start using whatever it is kind of moving forward. You know, a lot of it is, you know, take those first steps or have something like that established in the first place, but tie it in and mix it in with the world that you have. Like, you know, the whole steampunk aesthetic of, you know, this is the current level of technology, but there's still people out there, you know, slinging spells around and carrying swords, because it's not, you know, everybody's driving a car. It's the mixture of there's some cars, some people are still on horses going around or something.
Yeah. Yeah. I really like the idea of drawing inspiration from like Star Trek. The Star Trek or Stargate. Stargate's another really good one that had a huge technology variance.
Oh, that's a huge good example.
Yeah, between the people that are exploring and then finding places that are far below or far above them as well. And so I think this type of world or this type of thing as a story hook or a campaign hook is an incredibly interesting thing to be able to do, because you just don't see it necessarily that much. You see, but there are some good examples in modern media that you can pull from or in fiction. Mm-hmm. Like I mentioned, there's a lot of really good stuff like that. The books and movies, TV shows. But yeah, it's this conversation is giving me lots of little ideas. There's a lot of really fun design space and story space within that that lost civilization, or there are, you know, higher beings or more powerful beings out there that we don't know, and they may not even be deity. They just may be very technologically advanced. Mm-hmm. I think the first Thor movie, where it's just like
you call it essentially magic, we call it science.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So high enough science is perceived as magic at some point, right? And yeah. So yeah, it's a very, very interesting thing. And if you have any stories, or if you've done something like this in your game, we would love to hear about it. Make sure you hit us up in our email or Discord, which we'll talk about here shortly. All right. No big community shout outs today, other than just kind of letting people know, if you are one of the five people who uses Sigil.
Come on. Six people. you know what? In all honesty, we don't know the numbers out there. There could be a ton of people using it.
There could be a ton of people. But that's D&D Beyond's 3D virtual tabletop, as we've talked about before. They are slowly releasing just a bunch of minis for it, just for free on the website. So if you're unaware of that and you are using that as your virtual tabletop of choice, make sure to go check out the link in the show notes on dndiscussions.com. There's quite a few packs now of just free minis that you can get. So take advantage.
Yeah. I mean, the way I look at it is I'm getting them every time they release them, because who knows what the future will hold. If suddenly they realize, oh, this is what we need to do with Sigil, then I already have a good base of stuff to kind of play with already. So don't foresee that really happening. But again, you know, it's always good to be prepared for any possibility.
Free stuff. Free stuff is free stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah. And then finally, Ben, I know before we end our episode, we usually talk a little bit about what we're doing in our own games. Obviously, as I mentioned last time, my campaign is currently just on our hiatus for just different reasons, busyness, summer, vacations, schedules, all that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So I don't have anything I'm doing currently, but hopefully will be soon. Because I know one of the big things I'm wanting to do, just on a non-D&D note, because I love learning new systems whenever I can. And so I'm going to be hopefully here in the next month or two trying the new Stormlight RPG, which is very exciting. Sanderson is one of my absolute favorite authors. I love the Stormlight books, and I love the setting. And there is a brand new Stormlight tabletop RPG. I think the PDFs for, there's a huge Kickstarter. Obviously it was very big. The PDFs, I believe, are dropping in like July or something like that, with the physical stuff coming later this fall. So I'm excited to kind of dip my toes in a little bit, because learning new systems is fun. Yeah. And it always gives me ideas to bring back just to my group in general.
Yeah. And speaking of new systems, Daggerheart is officially out as well.
That's right. Daggerheart is officially out.
I'm looking at potentially picking that set up sometime soon, just to kind of dig in and you know, see what it's all about too.
Yeah. Big grats to Darrington Press for releasing that. It's a big thing, releasing an entire fairly large fantasy system. Yes. And more games is good. More very games so. Grows the hobby and gives people variety. So the more quality stuff, the more support, the better. So big grats to them. Over at Darrington Press for finally getting that out. Demiplane has digital character sheets for that. Demiplane is becoming a very good go-to place. We even started using it for the vampire game that I get to play every once in a while. Incredibly helpful. So I'm and they're going to actually have the character sheets for the Stormlight RPG well. So yeah, it's really cool to see a nice hub for a lot of this digitizing of, especially the character sheet typing for all sorts of different tabletop RPGs. But you're right, that's a great shout out. That did just release like a few days ago officially. So very excited to hopefully get to dig in and run one shots, or check my friendly local game store and get involved in that as well.
Yeah.
Ben, have you played anything since we last talked, or is that still upcoming?
Nope. That's actually going to be this weekend. I am looking forward to it. The party is going to be continuing through the multiple challenges, trying to get the tablet of a ritual that they need to cast to basically save the world.
You know, just standard things.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the standard thing is once they do that, they still have more MacGuffins they need to go for. But you know, we're at level, gosh, are they at 16 now? I think I got to double check.
Getting up there.
Yeah, I'm excited because, you know, like I said before, my goal is to get them to 20 by the end of this. So let's double check what level they are. Yep, they're all 16 right now. So we're really getting close. It's great. And I got to tell you, them being this level is a little terrifying at times.
Yeah. Yeah. Encounter building, it gets harder. It's just a thing.
And something that I recommend is don't give them access to those books that let them raise their, you know, a stat by 2 points above 20. Don't do that. And then also don't give them artifact weapons that, you know, are up to like a +3. Don't do that too. with my really bad balancing that I've always said that I have, I have a paladin who has a +15 to her attacks.
It's a lot.
So I got to realize it's like, she's going to hit. But I mean, it's an exalted artifact. I can't have it not be cool.
Yeah. Cool. At the end of the day, we have lots of levers that we can pull mm-hmm. for balance.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and you're at 16. Yeah. So you're tier four.
They need to be really cool if they're level 16. And I mean, basically the players themselves are cool. The characters are even cooler. So
very cool. Well, I'm excited to hear about that the next time that we talk. But until then, Ben, it's always a pleasure chatting with you. Some very exciting stuff this episode, especially with a new class coming. Definitely go again, check that out. If that sounded interesting to you. But otherwise, Ben, why don't you tell everyone where we can be reached?
You bet. If you're looking for our show notes that have the links to the Unearthed Arcana and everything else that we talk about, go to dndiscussions.com. It's where you can find every single episode we've ever had and every single episode we ever will have. Look, you could be listening to this in the past, and I guarantee you that our future episodes are there. If for some reason they're not, don't hold me to it. Anyways, on top of that, you can also find a link to our Discord there, which I am a big fan of. Join our D&D Discussions Discord channel. We have a bunch of people there. We talk about D&D stuff all the time, have random memes that are thrown about. People ask questions, get feedback from other players, DMs, all that fun stuff. It's a great place to go. We have a link on dndiscussions.com in our episode posts. You can also find links to our Blue Sky accounts. So if you're looking to follow us on the Blue Sky social media platform, you can find the show. It is at DN Discussions. If you're looking for Ryan, he is at TBK Zord. And if you're looking for me, I am at Ben Bumhofer. Also on top of that, if you don't want to, you know, call out anything on Discord, if you don't want to call or talk to us, you know, in public on Blue Sky, you can always email us. Just send those emails to dndiscussions@gmail.com. It is a great place to send emails to, just because, you know, we read them. There's two of us. It's pretty easy. And then, you know, if you have questions or something like that, we can always talk about it on the show. You know, just send them our way. Or if you just have stories about your games that you want to share because, you know, you're really proud of a encounter or, you know, maybe a new class that you came up with or something like that, send them our way. We love to read them. Other than that, if you're like, hey, I really want to hear what these guys sound like when they play D&D, well, guess what? You can listen to Plus Five to Hit. You can listen to me. We actually have our very first episode of Campaign 3 out. So you can find out all about my new character, Calivan. He is a fun guy to play so far. More serious than my last character. So, you know, I don't have to be the designated Chaos Goblin this time. However, I do make choices based on his own sorts of beliefs. So we'll see how that goes. So check that out. Plus Five to Hit. Lots of fun to listen to wherever podcasts are played. But this show, D&D Discussions, again, dndiscussions.com, every single episode, your podcast player choice, wherever you're listening to this, you're going to find all the other episodes as well. And last but not least, thank you to you, the listener. We appreciate all your support. We appreciate you listening, subscribing, all that fun stuff. But even more so, the world's a better place because you're there. So thanks. Ryan, it's always a pleasure talking to you, so thank you very much. Listeners, again, thank you for your support. And until next time, everybody, roll high, but be good to each other.
Take care, and we'll see you soon.